And bow and arrow.
Fishing in this area.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the final meeting of the 2013-2014 Faculty Senate. Would you call the roll, please?
I see folks not able to hear. You having a hard time hearing? Okay. I'm going to call roll, but if I'm slow, it's because I'm trying to mess with the volume. Online folks, you'll have to talk loud. Abramovich.
Present.
Albertson.
Julie Cascio, alternate.
Okay, Julie's here for
Faith.
Faith Albertson. Baker, Tori Baker. Barnes.
Here.
Berge.
Here.
Bret Hart.
Here.
Cable. Is Carl Knapp here for Cincy? Thank you.
Here.
Condi. Cook. Christine, are you online? Christine Cook? She may be calling in. Davis?
Here.
Dean?
Here.
Duke?
Here.
Thank you. Fallon?
Here.
Is anybody in attendance for Javier Fochisato? Gibson? Gustafson. Hahn. Hardy.
He's coming to miss the shuttle.
Okay. Healy.
Here.
Thank you. Horstmann.
Yep.
Johnson.
Here.
Johnston. Dolly. Whitman. Okay, Falk is here for Knut Keelan. Larden. Lovecraft. Lovecraft. Meyer.
Franz is probably coming. He's got a seminar just beforehand.
Okay, thank you. Misra. Moser.
Here.
Newberry.
Here.
Radenbaugh.
Yes, here.
Okay, I'm just doing.
Shellcross.
Here.
Thanks. Short.
Online.
Thank you.
Yep.
Short. Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Winfrey is on the
phone. Here, online.
Thank you. Windsor.
Here.
Yari.
Here.
And Peterson. Rorick here for Shane. Acknowledging our ex officio folks in attendance, we have our Chancellor, Brian Rogers, Provost Susan Henrich, Vice Provost Alex Fitz, School of Management Dean Mark Herman. Do we have anyone here for Staff Council?
Here.
Brad's here. Anyone here for ASUAF? And we've got Falk wearing another hat for United Academic. Danny Shepard for Athletics. No. and Registrar Libietti. All right, thank you.
Excuse me, Jane, this is Tori Baker. I'm online.
Thank you, Tori.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, are there any changes, additions, deletions for the minutes, or are they good to go from the last meeting? Seeing none, I'm going to say the minutes are adopted. The agenda for today is a little bit complicated. Are there any suggestions or comments or proposed changes for the agenda?
And just to add to that, the reason it sort of turned upside down is that we were hoping that some of the new senators would come a little early in the second hour to be able to participate in the discussion on the Gen Ed and Burke and all of that stuff, so they can have a chance to get up to speed for next year.
Thank you, Cecile. That's correct. And let me just also just sort of comment. As I mentioned at the beginning, this is the final Senate meeting of the year. If you are in the new Senate, you are absolutely welcome to stay here. The only thing is we would ask for you to be in the gallery at the back if you're part of the new Senate but not part of the old Senate.
May I ask that to the agenda? I'm sorry, we haven't passed it, have we not? Have we yet? The agenda?
We have not. Go ahead.
Can I please ask that, in addition, if we have time to the discussion items, to add the department chair discussion that we were supposed to have that never made this agenda, at least as a discussion, if not an adoption per se?
Okay, we can add it to item 11, and I can bring I can talk about why it's going to be a discussion item instead of a motion.
Why it is.
Okay. Any others? Seeing none, the agenda is adopted. As I mentioned, the final meeting. Now I said it three times. It's a little bit daunting because the final meeting is one in which a lot of year-end stuff piles up, so we wind up with a fairly full agenda. So I'm going to keep my remarks to the absolute bare minimum. And in other words, I'm going to announce just one thing, which is that and we'll announce it again later, but please try to come, if you at all can, to the recognition of the Usabelli Award winners, which will be tomorrow evening at 5:30 at the UA Museum of the North. It's where we recognize some outstanding faculty for their contributions to teaching, research, and service. Refreshments will be provided. Thank you.
I'm going to do the same thing. There's so much to do, but I really wanted to say this is it's been a really great experience this year, just learning about how the Senate functions, not just in the Senate meetings, but in all aspects of it. And so I'm really glad I had this year to get up to speed, and I'm really looking forward to next year. There are a lot of big items that we're going to have to be dealing with next year. It's a great opportunity to have lasting impact on how our institution shapes itself and functions.
Thank you, Cecile. We move now to Chancellor's remarks. Brian.
Thank you. I want to echo what was just said about the congratulations to the Usabelli Award winners. And just encourage people to come and celebrate tomorrow. I had the opportunity over the last several weeks to read all the tenure and promotion files, and want to. While it's somewhat of a chore to read all those files, it's also really exciting to see the breadth and depth of what our faculty do. And congratulations to those who were promoted and/or tenured. The biggest challenge last month really was over the issue of injections at the Community and Technical College given to students of materials that shouldn't have been. I think it just highlights the need for thinking about risks to our students, thinking about safety for our students. And I would encourage people to continue to report any safety or risk issues that you see. It's a very unfortunate situation. I think we believe there are no lasting impacts, but really some trauma for the students, psychological if not physical. Finally, the legislature completed their budget work last month. While we did well in the capital budget, as reported to you at the last meeting, the operating budget did not come out very well. We did receive funding for half of the pay raises, but we'll have to absorb internally the other half of the pay raises. We'll have to cut travel by about 15% and system-wide cut another $15.9 million from the operating budget. Susan will report on the Planning and Budget Committee recommendations. Those will be out shortly, and we'll make decisions over the course of the coming month. It will be a tight budget year, clearly, next year. And I'd be glad to answer any questions people have. I'll be here for the duration of the meeting.
Thank you, Chancellor Rogers. Provost Hendricks.
First, I'd like to reiterate an invitation that went out via email to apply to the Academic Leadership Institute. For those of you who are not familiar, that's a sort of a seminar-style education session that I and my staff facilitate on Saturdays throughout the academic year, and so the applications would be for the next academic year. We have a number of excellent leaders as speakers for this institute, including the chancellor, the system president, and others. And everyone who's accepted for the institute gets a collection of leadership books recommended by our speakers. So it's a wonderful opportunity to develop your leadership skills. You don't have to have aspirations for administration to attend the Academic Leadership Institute. We've had many people who simply wanted to do better in leading their own research groups or groups of people within their department rather than aspiring to any high administrative position. We've also had the occasional person attend who, after attending, said, well, this has convinced me I never want to be an administrator. So it can help you to evaluate your life choices a little bit as we discuss the various leadership challenges that people face. So you should have received an email invitation to apply, but if you did not for some reason, you can contact my office and get the information on how to apply. The other thing I want to mention is the Planning and Budget Committee. This is a group of faculty, staff, and administrators that have been working very diligently all semester to evaluate various options for reducing our expenditures, also for increasing our revenues. We're going to be providing our report to the Chancellor's Cabinet this week. Our report will also be available to everyone to look at on the website where we've been providing periodic updates so far during the semester. And so you can be looking for that approximately next week, although we have to do a little bit of polishing and editing before our reports are ready for everyone to see on the website. Keep in mind that what we are providing to the Chancellor's Cabinet are recommendations. That's our role, not to decide, but to do as much research as possible in the short time frame provided to us and to provide the best reasoned recommendations that we can to the higher administration. I also want to express my appreciation to all of the people who have been participating in Planning and Budget Committee, including your Faculty Senate leadership here. It's been a lot of work. Everyone has been very diligent about completing the work and also about attending the many meetings of the committee, and so I thank everyone.
And there have been a lot of meetings. I just want to just emphasize just one thing that Provost mentioned, which is the Academic Leadership Institute. I went through it a couple of years ago, and I think other people in the room have as well, and I found it to be a really useful and informative experience. So if you can do it, I would encourage you to apply. Okay, the next thing up is something we don't often do is adoption of a consent agenda. Essentially, just a reminder what a consent agenda is. These are non-controversial items that are adopted en masse. you'll see here that there's a bunch of stuff in there about degree candidates and resolutions concerning recognition of people. What this does is the consent agenda, we would vote in favor of it, I hope, and all of those items will then show up again at the towards the end of the agenda as actual items that we will do, if that makes sense. So I look for a motion to adopt the agenda, the consent agenda, please. Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Second.
Thank you. Any concerns or items you want to pull off the consent agenda? Seeing none. Is there any objection to the consent agenda? Seeing none, the consent agenda is passed unanimously, and we will revisit this towards the end of the meeting. We move now to governance reports. First up, staff counsel, Brad, are you? Thank you.
Good afternoon. Well, I wanted to say, since this will be my last meeting reporting to Faculty Senate on behalf of Staff Council, thank you all for the opportunity to come here and share what's going on in the staff world. This month we'll have our election, and next year it will be a new set of officers who will represent Staff Council, and hope you will see a lot of them. And I've also really appreciated the opportunity to work, well, not me personally, but Staff Council's work with faculty on planning and budget. Specifically, and I've heard only really excellent things about the level of deliberation out of that group, and so we are very appreciative of that. As far as recent things coming up for Staff Council that I'd like to share with Faculty Senate, one item relates to geographic differentials. Last year, the Staff Alliance compensation group, well, Staff Alliance at large, sent some recommendations for compensation increase or compensation changes to the president, and one of them was geographic differentials. We didn't get a formal response. This year, we followed up and asked for a formal response, and regarding geographic differentials, we're told that it would cost the UA about $6.4 million annually. President Gamble would discuss the proposal with the chancellors and would consider requesting additional funding from the legislature, but noted that's a tall order given the budget requirements and there are no guarantees. And so one thing I want to specifically highlight here is I'm going to bring back a question to UAHR, the $6.4 million number. I'm not sure if that includes Fairbanks or not, and I think it would be interesting to discover what that number would look like if we didn't include a Fairbanks differential. And otherwise, I don't have anything from staff council.
Any questions for Brad? Let me just add, Brad, it's been a pleasure working with you. We haven't interacted that much, but I've appreciated watching the way you run your meetings and been very impressed. So anyway, thanks for coming all the time to these meetings. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have anyone yet from ASUAF? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, we move to athletics. Danny Shepard, are you here? United Academics, Falk, is going to pass. UAFT, Jane, do you have anything?
Yeah, I'll just
maybe speak.
I'll just talk about the health program. And so remember that open enrollment for all benefits eligible faculty and staff ends on May 16th for UA health plans. And also don't forget the you can save $600 for yourself and $600 for your partner or spouse by completing a personal health assessment and biometric screening by June 30th. And the $600 is for on next year's health. And one more thing, the Joint Healthcare Committee passed a motion to allow a 90-day supply of generic medications at retail. So you can buy them at your hometown pharmacy, and this hasn't been put into effect yet, but it's been passed, so it will be. That's it.
Do we have any idea when that'll be in effect?
I imagine July 1st, but we should all hear about it.
Super.
Any other questions for Jane? Thank you, Jane. We turn now to public comments. Are there any members of the public who wish to make a comment at this time? Seeing none, we are incredibly ahead of time. I'm really impressed. Are there any members who wish to make a comment, question, or announcement at this time? That would be Senate members.
I just wanted to thank the Chancellor. I visited a couple of rural campuses, including ours out here in Bristol Bay campus. The community, it's quite a community event, as you probably are aware, and we appreciate him and his wife coming out and being a part of the ceremony. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Debu?
I just want to make a quick comment about Mike Davis. He is retiring this year, has a long service to the Faculty Senate, and just wanted to appreciate, bring up this as an appreciation. I don't know. I'm jumping gun probably. I don't know. But Mike has been a close friend for a long time, so I just thought I'll bring it up.
Thank you, Debu. Anything else? Now, normally we have this section towards the end. Essentially what it is an opportunity for committee chairs to elaborate on anything that they feel is of note that that people might not have read in the minutes, in the agenda, rather, at the back of the agenda. And since you all read it, I'm sure that it's all clear. But just in case, are there any chairs that wish to elaborate at this time? Seeing none, Reiner, are you ready to give your presentation? Believe it or not, we are all the way to that point.
I would like you to dial to page 33 of the agenda, please. My purpose in making this short presentation is to try to bring you up to speed with what we're trying to accomplish with regards to modifications and improvements in our general, in our core requirements in light of the Board of Regents' resolution of the April meeting. Most of what I'm going to be saying is summarized on page 33, kind of graphically. Have I done something wrong? Okay. Well, I probably have, but not with regards to the noise that you're making. It's summarized particularly in kind of a graphical fashion. The upper portion of page 33 is sort of a summary of what's been going on. The lower portion is kind of a summary of what action we're trying to, what we're trying to do to in light of that. The starting point is that about 7 years ago, Dana Thomas started trying to organize the faculty to make revisions to the core requirements, the baccalaureate undergraduate core. One of the first pieces was to rename the core general education requirements. The logic behind it is that's pretty much what most folks do outside of the University of Alaska. So it's like, okay, let's get in line. There are some implications for that I'll get to in a moment. So that a committee was formed, the General Education Revitalization Committee. The second thing was to try to create a new set of learning outcomes that would reflect what we're trying to accomplish with regards to these revised core requirements, or now to be known as general education requirements. Those were passed by the Faculty Senate 2 years ago. This committee then, which is working on the revision of core, is called GERC, General Education Revitalization Committee, and it's a subcommittee of Curricular Affairs Committee, of which I am the chair. Over the last 2 years, this committee has been working to try to create revised general education requirements that would fit with the core, what would fit with the learning outcomes that were approved by the Faculty Senate. At the same time, a committee was formed to try to generate the same learning outcomes among the three universities. That effort has resulted in a motion that Dave Valentine will be introducing during this meeting, which is to say that effort basically started with ours, tinkered around with them, took out some things, added some things, and we're proposing to bring for your approval the revised version of those requirements. Okay, so basically the point that we were at was we have the three universities in agreement about what kind of learning, or the nature of the learning outcomes. We've got our UAF committee having a plan. Some people liked it, some people didn't, but at least they had a plan. And then the Board of Regents threw an enormous wrench in this whole business. And the paragraph in the middle of page 33 that I've highlighted highlights the nature of this wrench. Am I saying anything that could be construed as insulting to anybody? I'm hoping not. Okay. The nature of this, and again, the two kind of difficulties here are that it's a Board of Regents resolution. It's unclear what kind of legal impact a resolution has, but clearly there's no point in trying to start a fight with the Board of Regents. And secondly, the resolution charges the faculty across the UA system to generate uniform, essentially the same general education requirements. Now, previously, or what currently exists, is the legislation that if you satisfy any or all portions of the general education requirements at one university, you have satisfied the appropriate portions or all of the general education requirements at all universities. That's what's already in place. Their resolution was that not just make it transferable, but by God, make them the same. And again, there's some question about exactly what the same means, but also what general education requirements mean. So this brings us down to the what Curricular Affairs Committee, working with GIRC and working with the Faculty Senate, came up with. And that is, first of all, we're taking this term core, which everyone is acquainted with, and which some people have already mentally changed into general education requirements, for better or worse, and broken it down into two parts. First part is what the Board of Regents considers to be general education requirements. Okay, the Board of Regents in place that says everybody's going to satisfy these general education requirements. In addition, our current core has requirements beyond those 34 credits. And those are things like the ethics requirement, the O&W requirement. Okay, what we propose, and the terminology can be whatever, but we propose saying that, okay, what's going to happen in the future is we have the general education requirements, which we define as being what the Board of Regents says is general education requirements, plus additional that we're calling for the moment baccalaureate requirements. Okay, and so we're going to try to satisfy the Board of Regents' resolution to charge us by saying, okay, we're going to work really hard at making this 34 at least really similar, if not identical. This other stuff in addition to the 34, we're going to say, yes, every university is going to have its own. They can be whatever they want to, but they fall outside of the purview of what the Board of Regents says has to be identical. So there's a line on page 33 underneath of which two arrows. The arrow pointing to the left points to the stuff that we're going to be working on trying to make at least more uniform across the system. The arrow pointing to the right, on the other hand, are parts which are unique to each of the three universities, and we're going to try to continue working ahead on making modifications as we can. The only problem, well, the one problem with this approach is that there are some portions of the proposed revisions in the baccalaureate requirements, let's call them for the moment, which are kind of mixed. They're in both camps, and I'll be talking to you more about that potentially today. So the arrow to the right then says, all right, we're going to have these 34 credits, which are going to be more or less uniform. Part of the changes that GIRC suggested in their revised general education requirements was making changes in university regulations. And they felt that the current university regulations are stifling, have things in them which are not useful, and that those are the rules of the game, if you will. And back, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when you know, we were in the position of everybody's general education requirements were fine as long as we agreed to accept everybody else's. That was not a super big deal. Now that we all have to have more or less the same, this issue of what are the rules going to be, which is why I put this box in bold. The box in bold I put there is because the first step we really need to take in terms of getting truly uniform 34 credits is if we are going to be making changes in the university requirements, we need to do those relatively quickly so that everyone can agree, okay, these are the new rules of that we're going to be following, and we're going to attempt to do so in a relatively uniform fashion. Let me quickly take you to the bottom of page 34, please. Okay, the top of page 34 has descriptions of what the various courses are going to be like. And there's both a current version and a proposed version. This upper portion is sitting somewhere in Faculty Alliance, and we're hoping to get this moved through Faculty Alliance and potentially bring it to the Faculty Senate relatively early next year. And primarily, the wording changes are minor. One of the major wording changes is under social sciences, where currently the social science courses are required to be broad survey courses. And the request is to take out that, which has implications with regards to exactly what would satisfy the social science requirements. The lower one-third of page 34, which is all in bold, are the current university requirements with regards to the 34 lower division, what the Board of Regents considers to be general education requirements. And among other changes which GERC has proposed to match with their proposed changes in UAF's core, if you will, is to take out the requirement that the 6 credits of social sciences be from 2 different disciplines. Clearly, this is fairly important. Either we will continue with the current rule, which says that they have to be from 2 different disciplines, or we don't. But again, once you sort of open this can and say, we want to change university regulations, which requires approval from the faculty senates, from the provost and the chancellors, and then the president, but not from the Board of Regents per se. But certainly once you say, well, we should tinker with this, then it kind of opens up the whole door of, well, what else should we be tinkering with, and how should we go about doing this, and how quickly can we do this? Again, unless the rules are in place for how the 3 universities are going to have matching 34 credits, we can't really go about unifying things very much. So this is why on page 33 I put a big solid box around it. This has to be a major effort to get if we are going to be making changes, to get those changes made across the system so that if we do have new rules, we can say, okay, these are the new rules, and here are the courses that are going to meet those new rules. Once we have agreement, I'd like to take you back to 33 now. Once we have agreement, and exactly how we do that is not entirely clear to me. Once we have agreement on those, what the nature of those 34 credits are going to be, then the 3 universities can work on at least getting overlapping sets of courses that will have identical numbers where they really are identical subjects and be as close as possible to each other. So the left-hand side are things that are in the future that we need to be working on relatively rapidly, but as a faculty senate, we really can't do much with right at the moment. Okay, the stuff on the items on the right-hand side, in contrast, are pieces which go above and beyond the 34 lower division credits, and these we've decided we can move ahead on. We can consider and debate and say, okay, we want to make these changes or not make these changes, of which there are 3 items that I've listed at the very bottom right-hand side. The one I underlined is called the capstone experience requirement. This is one which we will introduce to you for your consideration today. The second one underneath that one is potential changes in the oral and written communications requirement. We have introduced this as a discussion item today because, frankly, there's uncertainty as to exactly how we should deal with this. And the third one, which isn't even being brought up as a discussion item, it's so complex and controversial, is the possibility of adding additional attribute requirements. And part of the complication of this is this would potentially involve the 34 credits as well. What we're hoping for is a special Faculty Senate meeting in September that will be largely concerned with these kinds of curricular things. We're also hoping for some forward motion over the summer that we can try to better talk with. And of course, some of you won't be here in the new Faculty Senate. Many of you, I'm hoping, will be here in the new Faculty Senate. We really are trying to do two things. First of all, improve our core experience, whatever we decide to call it, for our baccalaureate students, but also to do so in a way that kind of sort of accommodates the Board of Regents' resolution of trying to have more uniformity with the other three units, by the other three universities. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Reiner? Debu?
Yeah, the mention of this capstone course that you did and other stuff, where is that in this page 34?
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're absolutely right. That's on page 36.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. Okay. And then the discussion item that we'll be bringing up later is on page 48.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I would just mention, Reiner, just to clarify, you said something about a special Faculty Senate meeting. I think what you meant, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the regularly scheduled Faculty Senate meeting in September is generally a fairly light meeting because the committees haven't really done much work yet. And so the idea basically is that we would devote a lot of the September meeting, that is the first meeting of next fall, to dealing with general education and moving this whole thing forward.
Yes, thank you for your correction.
Mark?
Is there going to be more explanation of what would be required at the top?
Have you read through the item on page 36?
Yes.
Okay. The key phrasing here is it will be the responsibility of each department, program, and or school college to create, deliver, evaluate, and assess their capstone experience. In other words, the proposal is rather to create some kind of one-size-fits-all, it must fit into this box, is to have each program decide for itself what constitutes its capstone experience. And to evaluate it, to modify it as needed, and to use it as part of their assessment.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark. Yeah.
So my concern would be, you know, there are probably lots of departments that already do something, and it would be fine. But a department that's mandated to do it and did it reluctantly might produce a bad outcome.
I could not.
Let me propose that we. We're starting to already to discuss that particular motion, and we should probably hold off on that until we're actually on the motion.
Yeah, agreed. And I could not agree with you more about this whole issue, about how we go about doing so, all of these things. I'm in total agreement, and this is why it's being brought up to the Faculty Senate. Okay. And furthermore, we're also suggesting that it go to a vote of the faculty as a large as a means of trying to encompass greater faculty sense of, this isn't really, well, I don't know, better faculty sense of, okay, I think I can make this happen, whatever. Thank you.
Go ahead, Cecile.
So we've kind of gotten off topic, and Dave has brought us back onto topic.
Yes.
Thank you, Dave.
What I'm hoping is becoming clear to everybody is that the revision of what we used to call the core has gotten infinitely more complex. And that despite the fact that a group of people have been very dedicated to working on this for multiple years, two groups of people have been very dedicated to working on this for years, it has gotten more complex. And so I think we really need to think through sort of how we conceptualize of a core set of courses or or requirements that we want all students to have, and what set of that do we consider just sort of, you know, basic general education? And is that enough for us as opposed to having this broader core as we have defined it so far? So is it okay to go to this much more small, you know, this much smaller, mostly almost all, all lower division, I guess, courses, the way it's thought about right now? You know, and a lot of universities are doing that. So, is that a model we can get behind, or do we want something else? And if so, you know, as Reiner's pointed out, it gets very complicated. I think Cindy had a question in the back.
Or probably a statement.
Is this turned on? Just a quick comment. I know that members of the GERC committee were planning to be here at 1:50 for Reiner's presentation, and they will probably be here in time for a discussion of the motions. I know Jonathan was planning to be here. So I would encourage you to include them in that conversation.
Thanks.
Cindy, do you think I said anything that was rude or harmful to... Do you think I said anything that was rude or harmful to GERC?
Oh, no.
Okay, just checking.
I just know that Jonathan had encouraged them to come, and they'll be coming expecting to be part of the conversation.
Thanks for letting me know. I didn't know what time they were. I was kind of looking around for them. I didn't know what time they were coming. So.
Well, very in good. His email, he had said, be there by 1:50.
Okay.
So.
All right, very good.
Expecting that we would never be ahead on the agenda.
Yeah, I'm shocked too. Anna?
Do I need to turn this on, or can you hear me? Yeah, okay.
You're on.
I'm just wondering to what extent there's actually room for discussion at this point. We've been discussing various aspects of this and other things, like the Board of Regents resolution to unify the three campuses for the past few meetings, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of flexibility. And so I'm wondering to what degree there's flexibility in the discussion and in any proposals we might come up with and so on.
Thank you, Anna. I'll just speak for myself here.
Please.
If it's all right. I think there's actually quite a bit of flexibility. The idea here is to say, okay, the Board of Regents has essentially asserted what it wants with respect to general education, but it's defined what it sees as general education as essentially a set of courses that provides a broad background to students. So all students get courses in the natural sciences, the social sciences, the humanities, and the arts. And that's basically what the Board of Regents has said. And it's also saying that it wants that to be unified across the three universities. Now, I'm not saying that this is the way that we're going to go, but I can envision one pathway that provides a great deal of flexibility, which would be for the three universities to essentially say, okay, here's a list of what we have that would satisfy humanities requirements, and each of the three universities would say that, and we'd wind up with a bucket full of humanities courses, any one of which from any university, any of the three universities, would satisfy that requirement. Okay, so that's one possibility. And there's a great deal of flexibility within that, I would argue. So go ahead, Anna.
So I guess... not having thought through that possibility extensively, I'm just going to speak off the top of my head, and it may change by next meeting in an hour and a half. But philosophically, my approach to academia has been that, students come in having certain requirements, having met certain requirements in order to get into a university, even an open university, right? And that at the university level, they're really exploring a lot of possibilities, and that diversity is to be encouraged. And so within that, it makes sense to me to have more of a bucket list than particularly the same courses in each of the three campuses. And encourage that creativity and that comes with diverse opportunities. That's what I'd say.
Yep, fair enough. Yep.
If I could also add, we're in an exceptionally fortunate position, at least next year, with regards to all this, because Dave Valentine has been working with these curricular activities virtually since the start of this big change, this big effort. He was on the GERC committee that got the, or he was chairperson of the GERC committee that got the revised learning outcomes passed by the Faculty Senate in 2012. And although he won't be president of the Faculty Senate next year, he will be, in fact, president of the Faculty Alliance, which means that we will have a strong voice, but also communication with regards to what we're going to try to move forward with the three units at once with. And let's hope that we can take advantage of this exceptional opportunity as much as we can next year while we still have it. You know, after that year, who knows who's going to be in charge and what kind of communication there's going to be between the Faculty Alliance, which represents all three, and UAF.
Thank you, Rainer. One other thing I would add to that, and with respect to the first part of your question, which was how much room is there for discussion, I think if you consider how the Curricular Affairs Committee is bringing this forward, you'll see that it's really doing its level best to encourage the widest and most careful discussion it can get. First, by bringing these things in various stages of gestation to the Faculty Senate for either passage of a motion or for discussion, or in the case of the attributes, for giving us a heads up essentially that we will be talking about those things in the fall. The second thing to observe is that the Curricular Affairs Committee is essentially asking the motions that it has forwarded to the Senate and will forward to the Senate focus on having a faculty referendum or faculty referenda on these various components of the revised general education curriculum and baccalaureate curriculum. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Rainer, but the essentially the stated objective of that is to encourage a very broad discussion among faculty, so that all of the faculty have an opportunity to weigh in and let their voices be heard on this. So this really is the initiation of an effort to get as broad a discussion as possible. Ken?
Rainer, you had talked about the process moving forward through the summer and then having the first meeting, expand on this, fully dedicated to it. Could you explain your vision of what the process would be throughout the summer, how faculty would be involved with that, given that we're...
A miracle will happen. No, honestly, Ken, I don't have a clue.
I guess what I was looking at was Curricular Affairs going to be involved, or is admin committee going to take it over, or just any ideas would be helpful.
One possibility is that we simply devote much of the September meeting to where we are now, rather than anything new happening. I'm also hoping, and this is just a hope, this is one of those maybe a miracle will happen, that in fact we have some kind of mechanism that, I don't know, administrative committee, somebody has generated for trying to secure modifications in the university requirements and a plan for how we try to move those forward. Again, the single biggest hurdle with regards to the unifying the 34 among the three universities is if we are going to make changes in the rules, to make them relatively quickly and to make them in a way that doesn't that the relevant faculty are in favor of. And exactly, we've talked about this, but we actually haven't come up with a mechanism yet. Again, this whole business, for example, of the two social sciences have to be in different disciplines, and there are other subtleties built into the current requirements that either need to be changed relatively quickly, or we need to recognize, okay, we're going to stay with the same set of rules, and we're not going to mess. So to answer your question, Ken, I am not planning on doing any subversive activities while you're not looking. Thank you for asking. Paul?
Just two quick questions. I've been partly involved in this, but you haven't presented on this. My feeling is that the new requirements will make education better. That would be the idea. I wonder how that's possible in a limited budget environment. So if we basically pay less but have a better education, I wonder how that's possible, if that means if positions are basically eliminated or if we hire new people. My second question is about e-learning, specifically because e-learning is also supposed to be campus-wide, Alaska-wide. Has there been any consideration about e-learning and how it feeds into this these new requirements?
Could you repeat that last part then about the Alaska-wide?
Well, in e-learning.
Oh,
possible.
E-learning.
Yeah.
No, not to my knowledge. To the best of my knowledge, and Jonathan, feel free to jump in. E-learning has not been explicitly addressed as part of the GERC proposal changes in the baccalaureate requirements.
That's right. Yeah. That's.
Thank you.
There is sort of an implicit notion that if we are going to have a uniform general set of general education requirements, that that students from across the state would be able to choose, and some of them will almost certainly be remotely from among a menu across the three universities.
Yeah, I mean, 99% of GERC's work was done before the summit team's pronouncement, so it wasn't actively considered. There were discussions after the fact that this would seem to lean heavily on e-learning, which to the detriment of classroom delivery, in order to be able to have a unified set of general education requirements. But it's not something that GERC actively took into consideration, because it wasn't consideration for most of the time we were doing.
And just to clarify, just one quick thing. I believe you said summit team, and I think that what you mean is the Board of Regents.
Yes.
Different group of people.
Okay.
Very different.
Okay.
Are there any other questions or comments? Oh, John.
Yeah, there actually was, and this a couple years back, the Faculty Alliance had an e-learning task force, and they made a few recommendations. I mean, this is obviously a field that changes very rapidly. In a couple of years, it's developed quite a bit. But I think there are some guidelines one could use. And since all of this needs to go through the Alliance anyway, that seems a good venue to dust off that old report and see if there's anything we can use to help out with this issue.
That's a good point. Go ahead, Cecile.
So one thing I would really encourage you to think about and seek more information on is the idea of attributes that are of various kinds that are potentially attached to courses. So far we've had mainly the oral and writing intensive, and then some departments have had, like in psychology, we've had a community service attribute, and I think there have been probably a few others across campus. So I really want you to think about the advantages of having that in terms of our learning outcomes and the way we're defining them, and we'll be discussing a little bit further down on the agenda, and also sort of the pragmatics of how we would accomplish that. Not something to be solved today, but something to kind of educate yourselves about over the summer, and so we can really discuss it in the fall.
Also, one other thing concerning the summer is that the Faculty Alliance will have its final meeting of this academic year this Friday. But the first thing that we do in the fall is a retreat. We're still working on the final dates, but it'll be just after we go back on contract in August. And my intent is to make the discussion of changing university requirements is a major part of that agenda.
Okay, that's great. So
that's where I think a lot of the hammering out of that would occur.
Great.
I think.
That's great. Let me also say, in preparation for the meeting, the resolution, the motion regarding Capstone, another big item here is how do we go about securing permission or approval for whatever kind of changes we're making. And the two obvious end members are, hey, the Faculty Senate approves it. End of story, And this could be anything from requiring that all undergraduate students stand on their head and spit BBs for half an hour to changes in any of the requirements. After all, we're the Faculty Senate. Hey, we're the Faculty Senate, right? We represent the faculty. The alternative is to go out to faculty for referenda to ask for approvals or disapprovals from individual departments, schools, colleges, whatever. And again, as Mark is pointing out, the chief concern here is that we get as much buy-in as possible, and whatever changes are made are viewed as something that the faculty are agreeing to, as opposed to something which is being stuffed down the faculty's throat. And that's so the first time this comes up with regard to the capstone. But in a general way, this is the problem that we're all wrestling with: is how do we actually make changes without simply forcing or attempting to force faculty into doing something different.
Well, go ahead, Cecile.
Yeah, and I guess sort of piggyback on what Reiner said concerning change and adapting to change and agreeing to change is that in some ways we're all tempted to recreate our own experiences in some way. And, so one thing I really admire about what GERC has done is to sort of unshackle themselves and think outside the box and sort of try to think about what makes sense not right now or what would have made sense 10 years ago or 5 years ago, but what might make sense, 5 years from now in the future, from here on out. And that's a difficult thing to do, obviously, because we don't have a crystal ball, for one thing, and because, making that kind of a departure from what we're comfortable with and used to is always harder to do and harder to agree to. Because it involves not only thinking differently, but doing things differently. And so I'm just very thrilled that this group of people dared do that. And, not everything is perfect, and I'm sure we'll have many discussions. But that's, I think, what we need to do, is not to think about what we're all comfortable with now or what we were comfortable with when we were in grad school, or what we would like to see ideally, but what would make sense for our institution, for our students in the future.
Are there any other comments or questions for Reiner? A little while ago, Chancellor Rogers whispered in my ear something that I think is worth sharing about this, and that is that if you read carefully how the Board of Regents worded their resolution, they really are focused, it seems like they're really focused in terms of time on the English and math requirements and ensuring that the English and math commonality is stressed. So I think that when we read, common course numbering and so forth, common course descriptions, I think that they're really focused on the math and English. That was the Chancellor's point. I would agree with that. So that's just a point of clarification. I think the rest of it is quite wide open. Debu?
I'm a bit confused about this capstone course, because we do
have
a capstone.
Can we address that under the motion for the capstone?
Well, this is just kind of a general idea. I'm not
okay.
Worried about the motion per se. Okay. Like in engineering, we do have a capstone course, and I'm guessing this one is spreading to other areas or...
Should we take a break?
Any other comments or questions?
Sorry.
Okay. We are scheduled for a break now, so let's go ahead and do that. There are refreshments over on the side table.
I would beg you to read over page 36, 35, and 48.
During the break.
During the break, please.
Yes. Thank you, Reiner. That's a good point.
Yeah, this is important stuff. Let's not guess on this.
With the nomination.
Perfect.
Wow.
Hey,
cool.
Where's maybe capitalized?
Oh, no.
Okay. Thank you all for making your way back. The first of the actual business items concerning our ongoing work to update and revise our general education system is to essentially consider the work of the General Education Learning Outcomes Committee, which was a sub committee of the Faculty Alliance that worked this year on essentially trying to come up with a set of common learning outcomes for across the entire UA system. That committee began its work in the fall and has submitted a motion to all three faculty senates for them to consider. And our first order of business will be to consider that motion that is from Jello.
We're on page 35.
On page 35. Thank you, Reiner. So if you turn to that page, just a reminder of the history of this. We adopted a set of learning outcomes for UAF back in 2011, and that was in the deliberations of the General Education Learning Outcomes Committee. That since UAF was a bit ahead of the other two universities, that became kind of the starting point for that committee to work from. And the committee considered that and proposed some revisions, which you will see, and that's at the bottom of page 35. One thing that is not 100% clear from the way that the that this is worded, and I'm going to own responsibility for this, what you see here is a set of learning outcomes, and not all of the differences between these learning outcomes and the ones that UAF adopted back in 2011 are made explicit, so I want to make it explicit verbally here. The ones that we adopted back in 2011 consisted of these learning outcomes, and then underneath each one of the learning outcomes was a bullet point that essentially said how we envision students meeting the learning outcome. The General Education Learning Outcomes Committee essentially decided to eliminate those bullet points from the motion that was going to go to all three faculty senates. And so what you see here is the sum total of what would replace our current learning outcomes. And the what is implied in this that I should have put in there is that those bullet points should have square brackets around them because they're being proposed to be deleted from our learning outcomes. So that is the motion that Jello has proposed for this. And I'm looking for a motion to
move.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Great. And Jonathan, did you want to add anything to my comments? I wanted to recognize that Jonathan Rosenberg, who has ably chaired the General Education's Revitalization Committee, or GERC, for the last couple of years, has joined us and is over here on my left.
I think that pretty well sums it up. Just another word of background, of course, the learning outcomes that we started with and approved in 2011 are our own modifications of the LEAP outcomes from the and GLO came out of actually a meeting with representatives from all three of the universities that was convened by AAC and U for giving us kind of some training and an overview. And what wound up happening was, quite frankly, since we were further along in the process, we got to set the agenda. And so when it came time to, we're actually ahead of the regions to a certain extent in the fact that we were already conferring on a set of common outcomes. And the bullet points were removed to allow each of the universities greater flexibility in how they would realize the outcomes. So although they don't, so if this version is passed as our new set of learning outcomes, they go away, but those bullet points also help inform what GERC was doing because that was what was enforced at UAF at the time. So to the extent we still like those bullet points, we still have them reflected in the proposals coming out of GERC.
Thank you, Jonathan, for that, for those comments.
Let me try to clarify this just a little bit. If I could get you to dial to page 36, please, which is the motion we'll be looking at shortly. Under rationale, there's a paragraph in parentheses. The first sentence of that rationale is the sentence that Dave Valentine is introducing a modified version of. The second sentence is the bullet that's in the current learning outcomes that will be removed if we pass the replacement learning outcome. Okay. So the bullet is what says, well, this is what we will, this is the form that outcome will take. And the proposal is, in order to have uniformity across the three universities, that we take out this how it's going to be executed portion and make modifications in the overall description of it. There is a similar statement like this accompanying each of the 4 points that would be removed from our learning outcomes statement if the motion that Dave Valentine has introduced is passed. Did I say anything wrong there, Dave?
Yeah, you're just fine, just fine. It doesn't necessarily mean that these are permanently gone. And as Jonathan said, I think modification is just that at this point, well, let me give you a little bit of history. During the course of its deliberation, Jello did work on those bullet points and on revising them. And we, as I recall, we wound up feeling that that was a little bit like we were in the weeds when we were talking about those. And so we decided to focus really at the 30,000-foot level and just keep those bullets out for the time being. There's room potentially down the road for those to be put in if we reach agreement about that. So what we're considering today is the spirit of it is, can we agree with the faculty senates of UAA and UAS that this is what we want all of our students to achieve with respect to learning outcomes? That's really the question for us today. So a vote in favor of this motion is to say yes, I support or we support the a set of common learning outcomes that look like this, and a no vote would be to oppose making a change to our learning outcomes to be like this. Debu?
So have you heard anything from the other faculty senates about how they are thinking about these outcomes?
They are meeting at different times. I'm not sure if I think we may be among the first to do this. But we have all in the Faculty Alliance said that we would bring this to our next Faculty Senate meeting. So that's this one for us. Really? That's it for discussion?
Could I have a clarification on what is quantitative literacy?
Yes.
What is it?
Tell you what, Jonathan, can I defer to you on that, since that's a...
Well, I wish the person on GERC could...
And could you use the microphone, please?
Yeah, sorry. I'll do what I can. Essentially, it goes beyond the mere quantification to the ability to apply mathematical reasoning, quantitative data to other academic areas or real-world problems.
As I recall, a lot of the conversation that went on about this was concerning ensuring, we thought it was important that students know how to work with data, for example. Mm-hmm. And so it was thought that we should emphasize the ability of students to work with quantitative information, not just be able to do calculus, let's say, but to function with data, interpret data, have some exercise with that. Alex Fitz, who's vice provost now, did chair the GERC 2 years back. So,
is this one on?
Yeah.
I pulled up the AACNU definition of quantitative literacy. Which says that it is a habit of mind, competency, and comfort in working with numerical data. Individuals with strong quantitative literacy skills possess the ability to reason and solve quantitative problems from a wide array of authentic contexts and everyday life situations. They understand and can create sophisticated arguments supported by quantitative evidence, and they can clearly communicate those arguments in a variety of formats.
Thank you, Alex. Debu?
I just had a discussion with Rajiv Ganguly, who was part of the GERC initially, and about this particular terminology. And initially, I believe GARC had a term called technology, which was replaced by quantitative literature. Is that correct, Jonas?
That was before I joined, so I'm not sure. Alex may be able to answer that.
There was a term called technology, as far as I understand.
If you look at the motion, it shows what is being deleted, and you'll see that there is...
Yeah, it's not on this one, but remember you sent that comparison chart? There was a term called technology which was just kind of in the GARC.
It's also shown in the motion as being deleted.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice both in the first and second.
Technological competence, okay. So that what he told me is that the technological competence and a whole suite of other thoughts were kind of embedded into quantitative literacy. So, which means my question is, will that allow... because we are getting into new technological paradigm, and will that allow programs or departments to use this quantitative literacy into moving students into a technological domain is my question, or technological learning.
I hate to say yes or no. I'll answer by saying I don't see why not.
Could I respond to that, David?
By all means. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, some of the discussions within GERC, but mainly in GELO, had to do with the idea that technological competence was subsumed in all of those other areas. Inquiry, analysis, creative and critical thinking related to the use of and generation of quantitative data, obviously communication of various kinds, and information literacy especially.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, Mark.
So I just have a small comment. It may not be important, but I was a little bit maybe troubled by the wording that says that the graduates shall achieve the following outcomes. Really, all we can do is we can set them some tasks or make some evaluation and say they've met our standard. Whether they've really done so is unknown to us. So maybe we should just say they've demonstrated competence in the following areas or something like that.
I'm having a hard time following your rationale. So you're saying that we can't really say that they shall achieve because we don't know that.
Well, we can test them and
that's
say, well, they passed these particular requirements, but that's just our...
These are our objectives, yeah. That all undergraduates shall achieve the following.
If you
these
say it's our objective...
Objectives. Okay. That's our objective.
Okay. If you make it clear that's our objective, I don't think we can ever... prove.
That's our objective.
Yeah, that's I'm happy with that.
Okay. Tony?
I would just submit that these learning objectives are broad enough that they cover really practically everything that I think we would want students to know. So I don't honestly see that there's much in here that could really be regarded as objectionable. Maybe that's just me.
That's a great point, Donnie. One of the trials and tribulations that GERC has endured over the last few years has been associated with essentially that thing. That breadth, that generality has been a blessing and a curse. It really does encapsulate the breadth of knowledge and skills and preparation that we hope that our students have, but it's been routinely criticized by those who are saying that these are so broad that we can't really assess them, and so the discussion goes, it's an ongoing conversation. But that was a problem that was present with our initial 2011 learning outcomes that we passed here. That same attribute is shared by this group, so no real change there.
What I'm a bit left with, and I'm very puzzled with that, is I don't know the implementation, like the effects, if we adopt it.
The effects will be, if all three Senates adopt it, is that we will now have, across the UA system, a common set of learning outcomes that we hope for all of the baccalaureate students at all three universities to be working towards. Now we have, that sort of sets the groundwork, in a way, for doing what Reiner talked about in his introduction of this whole thing, saying why do the three universities want to have this change? Well, okay, we're trying to reach these objectives, and here's what we think is the change in the regulation that we think is needed in order to get there.
And we can proudly proclaim to the Board of Regents, by God, we all have the same learning outcomes, da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
My question is about implementations on the ground in the department for the budget. Is there any projection? Will we make more money, more positions less? Is there any outcome or any vision where are we going with that? Or are we locking ourselves in?
The vision is that is that each of the universities will develop a set of courses and tracks and requirements that will enable these things to be achieved. That's where the budget consequences or other consequences or lack thereof will come out. But essentially, we're committing ourselves here to say these are the important things that we want every single one of our baccalaureate students to achieve. Yeah, John.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. I just wanted to make a comment. At the very beginning of this, you talk about the whole University of Alaska. You don't talk about the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So are we approving this for all campuses?
So we're approving this for all of the UAF campuses. We're approving this as part of the University of Alaska system so that this would be the... We're saying that UAF, if we approve this, we're saying that UAF endorses this common set of learning outcomes. If UAA and UAS also endorse these, then we will now have a set of learning outcomes common across all three universities. I'm not sure that addressed your question. I thought it would, but you look...
Well, it's just the way that's worded in that very first sentence is University of Alaska. So I'm interpreting it to mean that we're doing this for the entire, all three campuses. And we're not just doing this for Fairbanks.
We're doing this for UAF to reflect the what should be happening at the rest of the UA system. So you're saying the first line in the motion says all baccalaureate graduates at the University of Alaska system shall achieve. This is what Jello came up with. And so we're saying we endorse that. Yes, for our part, we endorse the this set of learning outcomes that would apply to UAF. And if it's adopted by all three Senates, would apply to all three universities.
Remember, Jello is a committee, you know, a system-wide committee. So we're endorsing their work.
Susan, go ahead.
I will propose an interpretation and allow the Senate leadership to react to that. UAF has already passed a set of learning outcomes. And now we are asked to consider by the Faculty Alliance a slightly different set of learning outcomes, which I believe are largely compatible ones with the ones that were passed before. What I would say is that the action today, if it's favorable, if we pass this, should really only have effect if the other two Senates pass it to get around the issue of doing this for all of UA. That is, if we pass this, the other two Senates pass, then we end up with a set of UA wide learning outcomes. However, if these are not passed by the other two Senates, I think that this motion probably doesn't have force because it refers to the whole system, and then we can revert to the learning outcomes that we already have.
Thank you, Susan. I think that's a great point, and if somebody would be willing to make that a friendly amendment, I'll include that in the motion. So the friendly amendment would be that this would go into force if and only if the other two faculty senates endorse the same motion.
So this would be a change in the effective date. Instead of immediately, it would be upon approval by UAS and UAA faculty senates.
Yes.
That's
yes.
A very simple way to do it.
Yep.
So moved.
I so move. And it's for second or whatever. Yeah.
We'll share.
All right, thank you.
So we're changing the effective date.
Okay, any other comments, questions? Ken?
A little practical consideration. If we move it, modify it such that it becomes effective as of the date the other two adopt it, what do we do in the interim? Do we go by the original, or do we go by the newly enacted, or do we wait on hold until the other schools decide?
I would say my answer to that would be that we would operate under the ones that we are currently working towards, which are so similar to these that it really doesn't have much in the way of a practical implication, I think. Jonathan, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Could I ask for a point of clarification, though?
Yeah, sure.
It occurs to me that, in effect, what's happening is that the three faculty senates are kind of functioning as a tricameral body where each one has to pass this. So what about the eventuality that some tinkering or wordsmithing takes place in the other two and we come up with slightly different versions? Do we have a conference committee?
Yeah. Then the Jell-O committee becomes a conference committee and it'll have to come back. Is the way that I would view it. But thank you for the clarification. Yes.
Can we vote?
I think we should call the question. Yeah.
The question, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. I lost the word. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Our second order of business is the one that Reiner referenced, which is a motion calling for a faculty referendum regarding completion of a capstone experience in majors or programs submitted by the Curricular Affairs Committee. Reiner, do you want to go ahead and...
Yes. Okay, so there are effectively three parts to this motion. One part is that this thing be subjected to a vote of approval by the faculty as a whole. That is to say that we would be approving the request to send this to the faculty as a whole. The second piece is that this is saying then that if it's approved by the faculty as a whole, the baccalaureate degree will include a capstone experience that is a minimum of zero and or could be higher credits. That is to say, it doesn't necessarily require a course per se. And the third part, then, is that it will be the responsibility of each individual department, program, baccalaureate degree, if you will, to devise how it will meet this capstone requirement. Fundamentally, the rationale for this is, in fact, the second sentence in the rationale, which comes from our current bullet in our current learning outcomes, which says that preparation will be demonstrated through production of a creative scholarly project that requires broad knowledge, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so this is essentially the a motion to execute the bullet point in our current learning outcome, which is still in effect until, in fact, the learning outcomes that we just approved a few minutes ago are also approved by UAA and UAS.
Are there any comments, questions, suggestions, discussion? Yes, go ahead.
Could you clarify this zero credit idea? Because you're requiring students to have a capstone experience.
That's
a
right.
Capstone has a certain weight to its word, I think. And if you're requiring the students to take it, but they get no credit for it, that seems odd to me.
Capstone experience might be anything. But, for example, there are zero credit classes. the music department offers them, for example, where the student is required to undertake a particular activity, and Karen can probably speak to this better than I can, but the student receives 0 credits for it. And the idea behind the 3 to 0 is to make it as flexible as possible in terms of what we're actually requiring the department to require of their students.
Okay, Mark?
So I'd like to start by saying I think this is a motion that seems like it's impossible to object to, because if the motion is to take it to the whole faculty, you know, it's hard to imagine that there would be a downside to doing that. Having said that, I would imagine that departments that don't already have a capstone experience would look at this and say, well,
exactly,
this is going to be a new thing we have to do. Capstone courses that I've seen usually involve customized projects for individual, you know, each student does some investigation of something it's a one-off thing, and it's a lot of work to come up with, you know, a bunch of one-off projects every year and assess them and things. So I would imagine that the wider faculty who don't already do this might see that it's a bit of a burden, and they'd say, well, budget's tight, and why would we do it? Having said that, if you're going to take it to a vote, then there's really no downside to us approving this, as far as I can see.
Also notice it does not require a capstone course, and there is no specific requirement about what this capstone experience is going to be. It would be set by the program, department, whatever in question.
Nevertheless, it would be something other than nothing.
It would be something.
Would
that's
have
right.
Some
that's
impact.
Right. That's right. It would be something. You're absolutely right. And frankly, the advantage to the department of having a capstone something is as a means of evaluating how well it's doing in terms of its educational objectives. You know,
from an evaluation perspective, it is a problem, because if it's customized, you know, if you want to evaluate something, you want a calibrated instrument, and if you bring a different instrument every time, it's difficult to use that for evaluation. So I don't see this as being particularly useful for evaluation, but it's certainly good for instruction. And it you know, I think it's a good idea, but I think there'll be concerns about implementation. Mm-hmm. But once you take it to a full vote, it's someone else's problem to decide whether it's a good idea.
Well, and so the idea is that if, in fact, we approve it, we're saying we think it's a good enough idea that we ought to send it to the entire faculty. Right, as opposed to, we think this is so stupid, we don't even think the faculty should even consider it.
And I think that that's actually constitutes kind of the downside of the motion, if you will, is that if we endorse this and it goes down in flames to the full faculty, the faculty senate winds up with some egg on its collective face, I think. You know, because we've essentially endorsed it, and if the whole faculty says this is a really bad idea, that's it.
But that depends how much you think we've endorsed it. I think we're just passing it on.
Okay.
I mean, to me it seems really odd if you're trying to make it a university-wide requirement, yet the requirement is to vary from 0 to 1 credit, so whether you actually have a course or not, like, what's the point? I mean, it seems really odd. I mean, I'm all for putting it for a vote, but it's not. I don't really want to say that I think it's a good idea. I don't really see the point of it. I mean, if it's going to be a requirement, then there should be requirements that we think are a good idea.
Again, there can be a requirement without it having course credits assigned to it.
But this seems so open and broad. I don't see the requirement in this. I mean, somewhere in the way it stands, someone could basically award a student, here's your capstone credit that you're getting no credit for, but you can put it on your
Maybe some context would help here. The reason why this capstone experience is being proposed is because there's a perceived value in students learning how to integrate knowledge from various parts of their education in a single experience. And so GERC has proposed, and through the Curricular Affairs Committee, that this should be a university-wide requirement. Everybody should do this capstone experience because we want to meet that goal of integrative knowledge. And the assessment that will be part of this will tell us whether or not students are achieving that, or so we hope. And if this is a worthless exercise, as you're saying, then we'll see that, and that would imply, I think, that a different capstone experience would be needed. And I see the provost is raising her hand, so I'll call on the provost.
Maybe it would help if I gave at least one example of a 0 credit capstone that probably would meet the requirement but might be appropriate for 0 credit. and that is a portfolio approach to demonstrating that the requirement was met. It could be that a student would be charged with collecting papers or other work products from a group of senior level courses and presenting the portfolio to the faculty members. And so it would be not additional work, but simply the student's selection of work that demonstrates that they had achieved the learning outcome, and then the faculty would evaluate that. So if people are having a little trouble imagining what a zero credit exercise might be, that would be one example.
That is additional work.
It's some additional work, but perhaps not a whole credit's worth. If they were really well organized and did it as they were doing the work in the other classes, it could be a relatively minimal amount of work. Now, mind you, if they were just throwing the papers into a file on their computer or figuratively onto the closet floor and having to sort through them later, it could be work.
And Mark, I saw your hand.
Just a quick question. So is this something that would appear, would they get a grade for it and would appear as a separate item on their transcript?
I think it depends on the department and the program. In my school, for example, we have a senior thesis, which that is graded. We have another course. It's graded. So in ours, it would be a graded experience. GERC and Curricular Affairs are essentially leaving this up to individual programs to address how they want to do that.
Do you think a student who wasn't going to receive a grade for this would put much effort into it?
If a program does that and they're not showing that they're meeting the learning outcome because the student isn't putting much effort into it, then I would say that there's a problem. But we're working backwards from wanting to achieve that learning outcome. If we fail or if that program fails, it should be evident.
One possible solution would be to simply take out the word 0 to 3 credits.
I'd be happy with that.
Okay. Is that what's causing people some heartache?
I think it's going to cause a lot of heartache when you send it for a vote, too.
Okay. All right. Ken's had his hand up for a while.
What I wanted to address is why Curricular Affairs modified this motion to the way we did it. And GERC felt it was important to have an integration experience, and we agree with them on that. At the same time, when you take more of a general ed requirement of integration and apply it at the upper division, it seems like the most appropriate place to design it is within the program or department or school. They are the ones most able to identify what the best integration experience would be for those particular students. They would also be in the best place to be able to assess whether that experience was successful or not, and then be able to use that assessment measurement to close the loop and make modifications to improve the educational experience going forward. So it was really from an application along with a design to keep the integration experience under the control of the school or department and maximize the probability of having a really useful assessment that could lead to improved education in the future.
Okay, Julie?
I understand the impulse, and I agree with the motivation here, but I have a similar concern about the vagueness of what's being required. And my concern doesn't stem from the 0 to 3 credits. It stems from the fact that there's actually no description of what's being required here. The rationale describes why we want or would want to do this, but there's nothing in the actual motion that talks about integrative or applied learning or anything like that. All you're saying is there needs to be some kind of capstone experience, but there's no definition of what that is. So it's extremely vague, and it doesn't give the departments any guidance, and it also doesn't give Faculty Senate any sense of assurance that anything specific is going to be accomplished.
So you're recognizing that under rationale it talks about integrating and applying knowledge.
Right, but the motion itself doesn't include any of that language. So that's the reason you we think we want to do it, but when we tell people what it is they're going to need to do, all we say is there needs to be a capstone or experiential learning opportunity without describing what that might entail or what the criteria or components of it ought to be. Or I think there needs to be more language in the actual words, the wording of the motion.
Is this something that we need to, well, Reiner and or Jonathan, do you want to say anything to that? Is it?
I agree. Actually, I think Julie's making a very good point there. Now, on the one hand, there's a reason, and a lot of that's come out in discussion, why it's so vague and why the 0 to 3 range. Certainly, Girk, when we proposed this, didn't want to presume that we knew what would be appropriate or doable within the capacity of any department or major. The Susan's example of a zero credit option was one that we had discussed. It may be just a matter of having certain assignments and certain classes that are flagged to be part of a portfolio to be reviewed, but the purpose of integration and application, I think, should probably be in the proposal. I don't think we want more specificity than that, because I think you really need to leave it to the experts to know what works best for their field, but the purpose.
Well, one option here that would, I think, that might address Julie's concern is, what if the rationale or the bulk of the rationale, the first paragraph of the rationale, essentially were incorporated into the motion?
Yeah.
That'd be much better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dave, can I
would I'm looking at Jonathan and Reiner to see if they'd be willing to accept that as a friendly amendment.
My sense is I'm actually hearing a motion to table and bring this up again in September with a more explicit wording. Potentially that faculty senators will study and decide whether it's too confining or in fact meets the specificity requirements that you're suggesting it doesn't have now.
Okay, so essentially Reiner has made a motion to table, if I interpret that correctly. If there's a second, there will be no discussion on the tabling motion and we'll have to vote on it. So,
I'll second that.
Okay, and all those in favor of tabling, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion's tabled. Thank you.
Honestly, any additional input that you'd like to make into this thing would be great, would be super. And we'll do our best to bring something forward in September that addresses the various concerns that have been addressed today.
I believe that GERC's proposal that went to CAC included more information on the capstone, including rubrics for assessment.
Agreed. And that would be my first approach, Alex, would be to go back to that. Agreed.
Okay, we're moving on to item C under 10. This references attachment 199/13, which I'll introduce shortly as soon as I get to it. Okay. This is a kind of a technical issue. Last fall, or actually last year, I should say, the Faculty Appeals and Oversight Committee, the Faculty Senate decided to do away with it, and that we would find other mechanisms to deal with the tasks that they had. This past fall, we passed a motion that instituted something called the Faculty Administrative Review Committee, which we called FARC, which was going to be composed of the chairs of the committees that were assigned to review administrative files, specifically the Group A administrators. We did not envision what would happen in case there were no Group A administrators to be evaluated, and this year was such a year, so there was no FARC, and yet we had some Group B administrators that had to be evaluated, and we need a mechanism for the Faculty Senate to exert oversight on that. What we've proposed is, in the eventuality that there is no FARC because there were no Group A administrators being evaluated, that the Faculty Senate president and president-elect would examine the process through which the Group B administrators were evaluated and essentially our job would be to say yes, procedure was followed, or no, procedure was not followed. So that's the substance of the motion.
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, I'm going to ask for a vote. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. The last item is the motion to approve the Department of Computer Science unit criteria submitted by Unit Criteria Committee. Chris, take it away.
Yeah, so the Department of Computer Science is now in the College of Engineering and Mines. They used to be in the College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics and have since moved. And the changes that they've made to the standard template for unit criteria are to reflect some factors that are specific to their discipline. There are a number of things that you can see in their document. The most notable is that unlike in a number of other disciplines in computer science, both journal and conference publications are considered equally valid because of the nature of their discipline. So I would say that's the most substantive portion of this. The committee unanimously recommends that we approve their unit criteria.
Okay, and I'll take that as a motion. And is there a second?
Second.
Seconding her motion. Thank you. Who seconded? Somebody did. Thank you, Reiner. Okay, any discussion on this? Okay, seeing none, please signify your approval by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Good afternoon, ladies.
Motion carries. All right, we move on now to discussion items. We used to be ahead of schedule. We are now not ahead of schedule. And so the first item is an interesting one concerning moving away from the O/W requirements towards a C attribute. Reiner, you are in the unenviable role of introducing this.
Page 48 of your agenda, please. Page 48. Currently, every baccalaureate student is required to take two written intensive courses and one oral intensive course. There's some unhappiness with the system, in part because it's difficult to maintain does a given course actually have all the pieces, and in part because of the inflexibility implied by it must be written intensive or it must be oral intensive, and of course there are some courses which are both oral and written intensive as well. In response to the issues which have been seen with regards to the O and W requirement, GIRC came up with an alternative system that would involve so-called communications or C courses instead. Each student would need to take three C courses instead of the current two W's and an O. Unlike the previous motion where left things real vague about what we're talking about here, in this discussion item, I have put in everything that GIRC proposed concerning what these C courses would be like, how one would go about qualifying for a C course, and what this would mean potentially in terms of changing the system. And explicitly, all existing O and W courses would need to be modified to meet the requirements for the new C approach. However, the existing approach that, in fact, you could take, right now you can take an O and W class from any department, from any program for which you have the prerequisites, and the same approach would apply towards these C courses that as long as you had the prerequisites, you could take a C course from any program, including your own, in order to pass this communications requirement.
for better or worse, majority of members of the Curricular Affairs Committee were not happy with the proposal and have proposed instead that the whole business of exactly what sort of communications requirements there would be, and this is item Roman numeral 2 at the very bottom of page 48, which for a variety of reasons I have not really done justice to in terms of the proposal, but essentially it says, in contrast, each program will simply devise for its own students what it considers to be adequate communications requirements, and there would be no overall overarching UAF baccalaureate requirement for either O courses or W courses or C courses. Frankly, there's advantages and disadvantages to both, and the reason for bringing this forward as a discussion item is to get people's responses to this. Ultimately, if we were to move forward with, for example, a change from an O and two Ws to three Cs, I would propose again that this go forward to a UAF faculty vote as opposed to simply a faculty senate approves it, and so thus it becomes law.
And just to clarify, this is not a motion. This is, we are not talking about voting on this. So this is merely an effort by the Curricular Affairs Committee, essentially to get, to use an overused word, to crowdsource this a bit and get some input from you all with respect to how you, which of these alternatives or perhaps another one you would endorse. Mark?
So I have a question. I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, but it looks to me as if a student could satisfy these requirements without ever doing anything written intensive or without ever doing anything oral. They could do it all by videography and dance or something. Is that true or not?
Okay, so I think the easiest way to address that is I'm not sure. They need to address at least three of the objectives. That's in quest statement number one under Roman numeral one. And again, these are draft guidelines. And they must explicitly address at least three of these objectives. And frankly,
course,
three of the five are...
That's
right, for a given communications course.
Not
okay.
A student could choose three courses that don't address written...
No, each communications course... The minimum requirement for each communications course, okay, that's right, is that each course explicitly address at least three of these objectives, and five are listed, okay? Three of those five are directly use the word right, okay? I don't see any way that such a course that then was approved as meeting the communications requirement did not have a substantial writing component to it.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
Okay, Anna?
In the first paragraph, you say that in practice, neither O or W course content, course content nor effectiveness are actually monitored, and I'm wondering how this new proposal would effectively monitor that.
Agreed. And this is part of the reason why Curricular Affairs was unhappy with the proposal was, wondering exactly that. Would this be any easier to enforce? Would this be any more practical to be enforced? And that's why we're bringing it up. And that's why I should say that alternative two, which instead of having or attempting a university-wide evaluation of the effectiveness of these C courses is to say, hey, we're just going to put it on the departments. You guys decide what kind of communications requirement you want. You enforce it, you decide how well it's working, go for it. Which, of course, had its own downfalls as well.
Go ahead, Ken.
If you look at the Core Review Committee annual report, they've addressed what you're talking about in there, that essentially what the way they stated, since reviewing syllabi is very limited in terms of assessing the effectiveness of the course, the committee discussed an alternative way of assessing the communication skill development, asking departments to submit reports. And during the last number of years that we've had the O's and W's, essentially they have not been successful in evaluating them or assessing them. And if you look further up, many of the course, the way they stated in here is, few course syllabi that fully incorporate the faculty center oral and writing intensive course guidelines. The majority of the syllabi partially satisfy the guidelines. So we've had the O&W guidelines, and the problem for years and years has been, once they're passed, you get new teachers coming in, the guidelines are not enforced, the assessment is lacking, and that was the impetus behind getting the assessment and the design transferred over to this individual program or school, along with the aspect that in school management, for instance, we have a one-credit course on professionalism. It's exclusively oral and writing intensive, and yet that really doesn't fall into the guidelines here. And many different schools have different ways of addressing the communication, both oral and writing. And what this would do, the second proposal would do, is give latitude towards that, would also ensure that the people who are designing also have responsibility to assess and, again, close that loop so that modifications can be made to enable the courses to be more adaptive and more effective in helping the students learn to communicate.
Thank you, Ken. Okay. Jonathan, did you want to bring anything forward to this? Because I think we're going to try to wrap this up, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to this as well.
I appreciate Ryan bringing it forward in this way because we do need input on this. I mean, there's a certain amount of confusion that's actually reflected even in the first part of this, which comes out of GERC. First of all, this and the capstone were extracted from the GERC proposal, which GERC would have much preferred to have dealt with as a whole when there's still the possibility of doing that. But we had originally, collecting feedback from faculty and hearing about the problems with writing that we all know about, and if anything, there's not enough writing and we need to have ways to really force students to apply and to improve their writing and for us to assess it. Originally, the C course descriptions were written with that 50% being writing. And we had gotten a great deal of positive feedback on that. And then as that went forward, we started to get feedback from other departments who were saying, well, we really can't accommodate that for one, because we just don't have enough courses that would satisfy that particular requirement if it's going to be a three-class requirement, and our students don't have the flexibility in their programs of going to other departments, taking perhaps a lower division course as a necessary prerequisite for an upper division course that would get them the third C that they need, and so reflect it. And plus the kind of discursive writing that, say, someone in the humanities or social sciences does isn't necessarily professionally appropriate and necessary for us. So those points A, B, C, and D and E under number one come from the original version of the proposal when it was 50% writing and weren't edited or modified to reflect 50% communication content appropriate to the discipline. So what you see here is this kind of unsteady compromise between a broadly realized need to do something about student writing and a need to make this flexible enough that the kind of an understanding that writing alone doesn't capture the kind of communication needs that our students have, and that different kinds of writing, different kinds of communication, and different balance are appropriate to different programs. So input is needed.
All right, thank you very much, Jonathan. Donnie, I'll give you the last comment.
I don't know if that's really appropriate, but I would just comment about the second one, which reminds me of what Georgina said earlier, which is that it's so broad and so vague that that communication doesn't even necessarily have to include writing. So I would encourage us not to have something that's so vague that it isn't actually, doesn't convey what GERC was hoping for.
All right. Thank you very much. Reiner and Jonathan, do you have enough to work on this some more next fall? Okay. The next item under discussion items is a communication that I had with the incoming president-elect, Debasmita Mishra. Last month let me put it this way. Debu Mishra is an enthusiastic advocate for faculty, and he is serving currently as the organizational vice president for United Academics and will be serving as in that position for another year. I was concerned about some potential conflicts of interest that may arise from holding two leadership roles in two different but complementary organizations. And so I wrote a letter to Debu and asked him to reply, and also I asked him if he'd be willing to answer any questions or comments people have from the Senate concerning this communication, so he can clarify how he will handle those leadership roles. So I'm going to just basically ask if there's any questions or comments folks have for Debu. And Debu, if you wanted to make any initial comments, feel free.
I'll first listen.
Yes, John.
First let me preface anything that I'm going to say is I think Debu is a hero, and I'm glad that he stepped up, and ever since I was president of the Faculty Senate was elected, I was pleased that except for the 1 year, there's been consistently multiple people interested in the role, and I'm great. And this, and I think it's great that people want to do this, and it doesn't reflect upon you at all. But I do share some of the concerns that David put out in the letter, is that there are, and my concerns, I'll be very brief, follow two things. Both of these roles are extremely important. And they're both extremely valuable in representing the faculty at the university. But there are simply inherent conflicts of interest that are just not that can't easily be resolved, and I don't think they can be resolved at all. As president of UAF's first startup company, I have a conflict of interest management plan that's 75 pages thick, having gone through this and seen what is required, I just don't see it. So that's my specific point. My general point is I think we're all stronger when we have more voices. Shared governance is in first point shared, and I think with more ideas at the table. And were it me, I'm delighted that you did this. I think you would be great in both roles, but I would encourage you to do one at a time. Those are my comments. Peter, did you have a specific point?
Whether I do have one, but I don't know if Debra wants to answer John before I have a question.
I didn't hear a question, so we'll
okay. I guess mine relates to reading through David's letter, and on point three, in terms of the relationship between the Senate and the administrators. It just came up today. We've just voted that for Group B administrators, the president and the president-elect will review the process of their approval process. How might you, if UA were the president-elect and in your position that would be dual for a year, sit in that role and make that approval process when you're also a vice president within a union? How would there be a separation between your role as the president-elect reviewing a Group B administrator at UAF and also being a representative to a union? Things like this will come up throughout the year. You made in your statement, yes, as a president, you would not be in that role when you're in your presidential year. But in your vice presidential year, there's a lot of decisions as a vice president. You're not only learning, but you're also making decisions as a president-elect in the Faculty Senate that would potentially be a conflict in your role as a UNAC position.
What do you well, I have a question for you. What do you understand as a UNAC org VP? I do not have a role in the review process. I mean, how does it conflict? I don't understand that part.
This is the we just voted to say that the president-elect and the president.
I understand that part.
So therefore, you as the vice, as the president-elect with the president, will be reviewing those.
Sure.
The administrator themselves, once their approval process has gone through, how would they feel if that approval process and the review of that approval process is being made by somebody that also has a dual role in one of the unions on campus?
I don't understand that part. Is, you know, as a role in the union, what prevents me from doing this without any conflict? I mean, or with I mean, is there a conflict there? I don't see the conflict.
I'm putting it out there as a discussion.
Do other
people see that as a potential conflict? Personally, when decisions and votes are made by the Senate that then gives the president-elect the ability to do an approval process on the representation of the faculty
sure.
Senate, then making sure that what you do then as president-elect is as the president-elect and not representing your other role.
It's
not personally against you, it's just holding the two positions.
I'm trying to understand
myself.
And I'd
like to say congratulations on being approved by the Senate.
No, that's not the point. I'm trying to understand how the role as a United Academics, let us say, organizational vice president. And by the way, thank you, Jonathan, for the suggestion. I'll address that. How does that conflict the role as a president-elect reviewing, let us say, Group B administrator? That I don't understand.
I think the point you're trying to say is that you, as president-elect of the Faculty Senate, would be also organizational VP of the union, and there is at least an appearance that a union leader is essentially evaluating administrators. Now, is that a conflict? I think that's the question that they're raising. Is does that pose a problem?
Shouldn't we review as a I don't know. I mean, is there something that prevents a union leader to review a faculty an administrator?
And perhaps perhaps the bottom line of this discussion is really the more thought we put into it as far as ensuring that we understand what these issues might be,
mm-hmm.
and in terms of anticipating and making judgment calls as they come up is going to be really important. And I don't know if the ones that I've identified here as potential conflicts of interest are exhaustive. But I think it's best when the entire Faculty Senate is aware of how these...
Sure, No, I appreciate your bringing this up, but...
I think David said it out perfectly, is this just came up today, and we as the Senate voted on that, and could we then have voted on that without a discussion about the role that this discussion, if you'd been sat up there in Cecile's position, would we have been having that discussion now for that decision to be made at that time?
Well,
because things like this, as they come up during the year, could potentially become conflicts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the important thing. It's conflict of interest is a complex concept, and it's not just the actual existence of conflict of interest, but it's also the appearance of conflict of interest plays a huge role. I stepped down from chair of the RAC because I didn't want there to be the appearance of conflict of interest. And we're in uncharted territory here, and you know, potentially there could be a legal action or something that calls the entire motions of the Senate into conflict if it is even perceived that the union had a role. And don't get me wrong, I think you're great. I think you could do both jobs, but there are potential risks there that I'm not quite sure why it's necessary to do both at the same time. We'd love to have you do one after the other. That would be good. that's my only thought.
So what exactly are you saying? You're saying that you want him to resign? Seriously, what are you saying?
I'm that would be one option. Another option would be to defer for a year, or at least we're going to have to evaluate a little better what these potential impacts would be.
Falk,
just one question. There was a vote at the last Senate meeting, right? It was completely approved, and you raised exactly this point prior to the vote. People voted with that information, and here's the outcome. So I'm a little bit confused now that that's raised after the fact when Faculty Senate has already decided. Am I mistaken?
Just a point. Right. No. And just a point of clarification.
The vote.
The point that was raised.
Respected. Okay. Yeah.
Right. The point that was raised was that he was running for United Academics president, which
true.
Was another office. This is VP, organizational VP, which is an office he currently has,
right.
And will have for one more year. Okay. Are there any other comments or questions for Debu? Yeah. Karen.
I don't have any questions, but I also want to say that, I believe everybody was very aware of Debu's position with the union before we voted last time, and the vote was taken. And, you know, if somebody was unclear about his role in the union, I mean, it was stated immediately before the vote, and yet we voted him in. So I agree with Falk that, you know, the vote was taken. We are all very smart people, I assume, in this room, and we're all, you know, well aware of the situation. So that was the vote.
Please understand, I'm not trying to undermine the vote. The concern that I had was that I didn't know, and maybe it's me being ignorant, I didn't know that Debu was going to be organizational VP for another year. That was what I didn't know. And I just was concerned about the potential there.
And if anything, this is FYI, because there may be potential pitfalls that you should be aware of.
Jonathan, you don't probably know that Don Lynch held the position of ARC VP of United Academics and the president of the Faculty Senate simultaneously. Mm-hmm. There was absolutely no conflict of interest there. Okay, he's passed away, and may his soul rest in peace. But there was at least one person who did that. And so why are we, I don't even see yet that there is a clear conflict. I'll tell you a conflict of interest, though, okay? Mm-hmm. A clear conflict of interest is when administrators do a job of department chair. That's a clear conflict of interest. And we are not addressing that. And you are coming and telling me here that I have a conflict of interest when you have not said one thing where there is a conflict. Please show me a conflict, an example, I will address that. And second thing I will say is that I've tried all my last 3 years or before that to be very ethical in what I do, okay? Extremely ethical. And if there is a situation where it comes up that there has to be some ethical decisions made, I will take the right decision based on the situation, okay? At this point, I don't see that, okay? Unless, and I'm saying that because this is I respect what David sent to me because that gave me a chance to think through everything. And I talked to several people on the campus, both senators, and I have written that here, senators, non-senators. It's not that I was not, I'm here with, you know, without any feedback, okay? We looked through every situation. In fact, I even questioned where would the conflict arise. And I don't have a single example yet that shows that there will be a conflict because these are complementary roles. And one thing that came up in a discussion is that there are in the Faculty Senate there are non-UNAC members, okay? And that there is a possibility that I'll throw them under the bus or something like that, okay? You know, I'm just using a... If that is a concern, I want to hear that, and I can vouch that I'm not going to compromise anybody's interest. That I can vouch today.
Okay, Doni, I give you the last comment again.
Uh-oh. Well, my comment is just that, Debbie, when you addressed the administrative committee at our last meeting, you said at that time that you would be happy to recuse yourself in decisions where there was a conflict of interest, and I think we were all really happy with that answer, and I just wondered if that's still how you feel or if you've changed your mind about
no,
that.
No, Doni, I just said that. Right now, I just said that. Whenever a situation of conflict will arise, I will take a decision that is in the best interest of, let us say, if it is Faculty Senate or it's United Academics, right?
I'll do that. And I'll be very ethical on that. Everybody will be informed. I'll take your views and then take a decision.
All right. I think that this has accomplished all the good it's likely to do. I'm going to move on to the penultimate discussion item, which is that just a brief history. You may recall that last year the Faculty Senate considered a series of proposed deletions for programs, one of which was the PhD in mathematics. The Department of Mathematics did not want to get rid of its own PhD program, and so the Faculty Senate withheld a motion to delete that program and asked the Department of Mathematics and Statistics to provide annual progress reports towards making a newly vital PhD program. Earlier this year, we received the report from the Department of Mathematics and Statistics, which we saw and approved of. And we further asked the department to update us with respect to statistics for incoming students, and they have provided an update which is on page 52. We've read it over, and it's they are hiring a new faculty member. They do have a new incoming PhD student who will be coming in the fall. So that is their update. Right. Any comments or questions about that? There's nothing to vote on here, so. Okay. At the beginning of the meeting, Karen Gustafson asked us to have a discussion on department chair motion. Now, let me give you a brief history because we are 20 past the witching hour. At the last Faculty Senate meeting, we came this close to bringing a motion to update and revise the department chair election policy, but other policies having to do with department chair duties and so forth. There was still some language difficulties in the motion that caused the chancellor to say that if that motion were passed, he would veto it, and that had to do with the identification of the two faculty unions. The Faculty Affairs Committee and the Administrative Committee both worked on revising the motion, trying to make it better. In the lead up to the Faculty Administrative Committee, Cecile and I worked with the chair of the Faculty Affairs Committee to come up with proposed wording that seemed like it was just about ready to get some vetting. However, because of a lot of the workload that was in front of the faculty, in front of the Administrative Committee concerning the general education reforms that we're talking about, we decided as a committee that the one thing that we could postpone until fall that made sense, that we didn't feel like we absolutely had to work on, was the department chair revision motion. The rationale behind that was that the next department chair elections would be in the spring, and so over the summer the presence or absence of a new motion wouldn't make a huge difference, especially in light of the fact that we didn't feel like the motion was quite yet ready for coming to the Faculty Senate floor for an actual vote. Since then, we have put the proposed motion online under the Faculty Senate discussion page, so anybody can go there and look at and comment about the currently proposed motion. It's not the same as the one that was originally brought to the Faculty Senate leadership 2 months ago. So I do encourage you to go look at it and provide comments and feedback for the new Faculty Affairs Committee to finalize work on it. Are there any comments or discussion on this?
David, I see a slightly different version here on the FAC committee report. That was different from what was posted on the faculty summit.
I'm sorry, what page?
This is the faculty affairs committee report, end of the year report.
Which page?
And at the end, we have the motion for the faculty.
Right, and what's I'm sorry, what your concern is?
This one has is slightly different from what was posted on faculty senate Google groups.
Okay. In the interest,
I'm just
Yeah. Thank you, Debu. Karen, did you want to? Okay.
I just wanted to say something. And it was just a question, actually, in the motion that was online, and it said it would be effective immediately. So you're saying that if this becomes effective immediately, say in the fall, if it does go through, then that means for the next election. It doesn't mean for the current chairs who are currently administrators sitting in that position. Nothing would change until the election in February or March.
As it's currently worded, that's how I would interpret it, yes. I mean, unless there's language in there that says that this is retroactive, I think that, and so if you want to propose language that would say it's retroactive, then that would be something to consider.
That was the question. The other thing I have, just a quick question, is regarding this. So let's say this, you know, a new department chair policy comes into effect. Who enforces it? Maybe I'm not sure if Susan, can you answer that or?
If there's a new policy and there's and it's approved by both the Senate and the Chancellor, then I would see it as the primary responsibility of the dean's offices, which I believe administer the elections at the present time. So they would review candidates for eligibility, and if someone who is ineligible was a candidate, that person would no longer be a candidate, I guess, under the vote. Certainly my office receives the results of those elections, and if we found an ineligible person, we would get back to the dean.
Okay.
Any other comments? Ken?
There's one item in there. It talked about the department head, department chair should be a tenured faculty member, but in, I forget the word they used, they eliminated the word extreme circumstance, but in certain circumstances, majority faculty can dictate that a non-tenured professor be a department chair. I think there needs to be some restriction on that, some explanation of that, because as it is, it takes a majority vote to vote the person in as department chair, and takes a majority vote to say there's a limited number of of tenured faculty that could serve as chair, and so basically there's no sense in having two votes if it simply takes a simple majority. I would think that typically you might have a supermajority of some sort needed to say agree that there's not an adequate person, a tenured person that's able to serve, but right now it simply takes a majority for both of them, and so you've got to wonder why. And there's no criteria for what are these extenuating circumstances when a non-tenured faculty member would be appropriate to serve as department head.
Yeah, I mean, valid point. I would encourage you to add to the discussion online, because this is nobody has this motion in front of them, or very few of us do. That's a reasonable consideration.
I would just urge everybody to really read through the motion and give your feedback now, really, because that's the basis on which we can make a change and move forward. Otherwise, it's going to sit there forever. You know.
I just want to encourage everyone to look through it too and read it through with the idea in mind that this is faculty oversight, and apparently, you know, being part of the Faculty Senate, we are interested in that. And this is whether you know of departments who have administrators as department chairs, this is happening, and so there's really no faculty oversight within that department or faculty involvement with some department. So just read it over carefully and make your best judgment.
Okay, any other comments?
David?
Okay. Oh, Jane, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to ask if you could possibly do the recognition of Senate service, because someone has to teach right now.
You mean just change the order a little bit?
Yeah.
We can do that.
Thank you.
So we move on to a fun part of the meeting, which is way delayed, but hopefully no worse for the wear. You'll notice on the agenda there's an order where Jane has just asked us to do a slightly different order, which is fine with me. As some of you know, longstanding senator of Mike Davis is retiring from the faculty and therefore from the Faculty Senate. And we wanted to recognize Mr. Davis for his service to the Senate. I want to read this aloud to you. Whereas Mike Davis has been a member of the UAF Faculty Senate for 12 years, from 2000 to 2002, 2003 to 2007, 2008 to 2014, and whereas Mike Davis has been a member of the Faculty Affairs Committee for 8 years, 2000 to 2002, 2006 to 2007, 2008 to 2013, and whereas Mike Davis has been a member of the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee for 4 years, some additional years listed. Whereas Mike Davis has been an associate professor, assistant professor and instructor, Department of Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development, UAF Bristol Bay Campus, from 1996 to 2014. And whereas Mike Davis has coordinated government and leadership student seminars in Juneau, Barrow, Bethel, Dillingham, and Unalaska, including the Alaska State Legislative Process, Traditional Knowledge, and Environmental Change and Development in the Arctic. And whereas Mike Davis has been an exchange faculty with Magadan Pedagogical Institute in Russia, 1992, and whereas Mike Davis has been a member, United Academics Representative Assembly, 2009 to 2014, and whereas Mike Davis has been a member, House of Representatives, Alaska State Legislature, representing Fairbanks, District 19, from 1982 to 1990, and whereas Mike Davis has used his creativity and knowledge, his dedication to teaching and advising students in rural Alaska, and the latest interactive teaching methods to reach his Dansard graduate and undergraduate students, and whereas Mike Davis has exceeded his academic responsibilities, enhanced the reputation of the Bristol Bay campus and the entire University of Alaska Fairbanks, and expanded the community's knowledge of government and politics, now, therefore, be it resolved that the UAF Faculty Senate acknowledges the many contributions of Mike Davis to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and wishes him all the best in his retirement and future endeavors. We'd next like to...
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm just a slightly lost here. We'd like to present now the award for Outstanding Faculty Senate Senator of the Year. That'll be to Franz. So there's a whole bunch of whereases on here. I'm gonna spare you and just say there's a lot of whereases and it's really impressive. So please recognize Dr. Franz Meyer for his. One of the honors that I get to have as the Faculty Senate President is that I got to sit on the awards committee for the Usabelli Awards, and it was truly a pleasure. I'm not kidding. It was actually a great thing. It was a little bit intimidating because we have some outstanding faculty that we got to recognize, and you see the list of faculty nominated, any one of which could have won the Usabelli Award in their respective categories. They were truly outstanding. The three that we recognize with the actual award this year really floated to the top of the list for all of the committee members. Dr. Joseph Thompson for teaching, Dr. Roger Roos for research, and Dr. Elena Sparrow for public service. I hope that you will be able to make it to the reception tomorrow evening to recognize these three outstanding faculty, and encourage those that did not win the award to submit their applications again, because it's a tight competition, but they were all deserving. So thank you for that. Excuse me. The next item is that we have several professors who are moving on to become emeriti. We've already recognized Mike Davis, but also Kathleen Butler-Hopkins from music, Craig Gerlach from cross-cultural studies, Robert Gorman from extension, John Hopkins from music, Gerald Macbeth from political science, John Olson from physics, Gordon Pooler from rural development, Kenneth Sasson from Atmospheric Sciences, Fred Sorensen from Extension, Terry Whitledge from Marine Science, Frank Williams from Arctic Region Supercomputing Center, and Miranda Wright, Director of the Department of Alaska Native Studies. We wish them all well in their retirement, and congratulations on becoming emeritus. And finally... Not finally. we recognize all of the chairs from the committees. I'm sorry, I just lost my place on the agenda. For some reason, my eyes are not working very well. So let's see, you've got them. So Jane's going to read them, and we'll just stand there and shake hands and hand them out.
Is co-review committee chair Miho Aoki in the room? Okay. Doni Brett Hart for the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee. Chris Kaufman for the Unit Criteria Committee. Cindy Hardy for the Student Academic Development and Achievement Committee. Guys hopping. Franz Meyer for the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee. Reiner Newberry for taking on the double duty again of Curriculum Review Committee and Curricular Affairs Committee. Did Jonathan Rosenberg leave already? See Jonathan. Okay. Jane Weber for the Committee on the Status of Women. And how about Peter Windsor? Peter still here for Research Advisory Committee? Okay, I don't see Peter.
Oh, snuck out.
Thank you, Jane.
Okay, so the last one has even more whereases on it than most of the others, but it's the recognition of service for David Valentine is serving for 2 years in the leadership of the Senate, and so I'm going to skip some of the whereases because, you know, they're the usual whereases.
Padding.
So I'm going to start with sort of somewhere down the middle. Whereas David Valentine has represented the interests of the UAF Faculty Senate at the Faculty Alliance while also working effectively with our colleagues from UAA and UAS to advocate for faculty and program interests across the UA system. Whereas David Valentine has committed his strong commitment to strengthening general education at UAF by serving on GLO in this case, committee during the current academic year, and making really a major contribution to developing joint learning outcomes. And that, I mean, when that committee started, I didn't think it was going to happen. So thank you for all of the people who have worked on that. That was really great. Whereas David Valentine has made thoughtful and constructive contributions to the Planning and Budget Committee for 2 years and the Chancellor's Budget Options Group in the spring, of 14 in order to provide a strong faculty perspective in addressing the serious budget shortfalls UAF is currently faced with. Whereas David Valentine has distinguished himself as a strong and engaged leader of the UAF Faculty Senate who can successfully balance the sometimes conflicting needs of getting it done and doing it right. Whereas David Valentine respects and encourages the open debate of issues from diverse perspectives. And whereas David Valentine never lost his optimism about the Faculty Senate's ability to have a real and lasting positive impact on faculty and students at UAF. And therefore be it resolved that the UAF Faculty Senate acknowledges the many contributions of David Valentine and expresses its appreciation for his exemplary service. I just want to add one, despite the fact that he's had this weapon, he never once used it on me.
Before we adjourn, just the last thing, I just wanted to say thank you all for that. It's been a remarkable couple of years. I hope if you have the opportunity to serve as the faculty president, faculty senate president, that you take it. It's been a remarkable experience. It's one that I value. I have really mixed emotions about the end of my term. On the one hand, I'm really excited. On the other hand, I'm really going to miss it. So thank you all for your contributions to the Senate. You've been a delight to work with, so thank you. And with that, I bring to a close the 2013-2014 academic or faculty senate session. Thank you all. Now, new senators, if you're going to be on the Senate next year, please stick around. In 5 minutes, we'll reconvene.
Are you aware of what happened to the banner?
Yes.
that they don't get, doesn't get put in.
It's very much equity combined score. I put that a little bit on high, on high.
Because two tests, two math tests,
but
they can put in separately. The other one has to put in by hand.
I don't know what our answer is.
Somebody has to, when our admin goes,
I'm more confident now that
she has to create a new line banner with that code and the combined score.
I mean, I can't tell you.
Are you sure?
Yeah. No, I
so when a student goes to register, they can actually register?
Yeah, after 24 hours.
Yeah. No, this was...
The only problem is...
This guy had
his
test
and then, but then
weeks ago.
Hot. Yeah. Oh, the only problem is I'm hearing about it. I did look.
Well, this is very bizarre. If you're not having it in...
Yeah.
We did. Why? David Puderbaum figured it out.
They're nominating.
Sometimes people send people to nominate.
Adult nominations are also allowed.
I'll have my adult
When I took the student down to Dave Puderbaugh, he said, I know what you're going to say, but people say it.
Yeah.
Many people come in. These are student services. He's usually the face. I think I'll have Dave call him. That'll be the best way.
I didn't do it today for sure.
Well, maybe that's why it's not happening for you. You're overriding, but
no,
maybe it's just that
it
line hasn't been put in.
They had analyzed the entire
2 years ago.
Okay, let's come to order then. All right, this is really just a short one. Welcome back, Orion. It's good to see you back. Okay, Jane, can we have the roll call?
Okay. Abramovich.
Present.
Allman. Barnes.
Present.
Berge. Blake.
Present.
Bret Hart.
Present.
Cable. Cassio. Kaufman.
Present.
Cook.
Present.
Condi. Dean.
Here.
DiStefano. Wendy Krosky was here for a bit for Diana, but had to leave. Duke.
Here.
Fallon.
Here.
Gibson. Hanks.
Present.
Thank you. Hardy. Hartman.
Here.
Healy. Hornig. Horseman.
Yep.
Johnson. Jolly. Lon. Actually, Ping Lon was here. Had to leave for class. Lardin.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Lovecraft. Mahoney.
Here.
Maxwell.
Here.
McCartney. McDonald.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Misra.
Here.
Moser.
Here.
Newberry.
Here.
Peterson. Radenbaugh.
Yes, present.
Rice.
Yes, here by audio.
Thank you. Shallcross. Short. Skaya. Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Winfrey. Okay.
Do we have a quorum?
I'll count that up real quick.
We don't have much business, but we do want a quorum.
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, well, welcome back to those of you who have been here since 1, and welcome to the new members to the Senate. I hope it's going to be a good experience for you. I'm looking forward to the next year. There, like I said earlier, there are a lot of big things that are going to be coming our way, so we'll have some pretty serious business, but also really the opportunity to do some good work. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm going to keep my comments to that since we've already been here for a while.
My comments. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, let me thank everyone for entrusting this responsibility on me. I promise I'll do my best to, you know, as David Valentine has said before, and I should thank David for a lot of insight into this job and everything. We have met before, you know. So it's going to be rewarding and challenging, and I agree with that. We have some challenges coming up, and we need to deal with that in a very professional manner. That's one thing. The other thing is that here is the real conflict of interest, and I wanted to bring that up because I know it has been stuck in the throat of many people, or some people, I would say. The real conflict of interest may be that United Academics probably is just a faculty-oriented organization, whereas Faculty Senate's responsibility is more towards students and quality of education and curriculum, okay? And I understand that very clearly. On Saturday, I was in Dillingham and for their further graduation ceremony, and a community member who is a business partner of a student I had before, a business partner of his dad, comes up to me and says, so-and-so speaks so highly of the education that he has received from you in your class and other stuff. So that makes me feel that we offer an education here, quality education, that touches, the rural Alaska or the corners of Alaska. And each one of you has done that or is doing that. And that quality of education that our students will receive also is embedded on how faculty, move the curriculum forward. And I will just mention quickly that I have worked for 4 years with Rainer Newberry in the curricular review committee, and I really respect what he does. I really respect, and I really believe that he has the institutional knowledge and the curriculum, to move the curriculum in a quality direction. So I look forward to all the committee chairs. I have worked with Chris Kaufman recently. Everybody, all the committee chairs are doing an excellent job. I haven't interacted with few, but I look forward to working closely with all the committee chairs and the administrative committee in the next couple of years. Okay? With that, I will stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Provost Hendricks?
Well, first, of course, I want to welcome back the continuing senators and to welcome the new senators. I look forward to working with all of you. I think the mixture of both experience and new thoughts and new voices will stand us in good stead in the coming year. We live in interesting times. there are going to be challenges next year. I firmly believe that tough times and how the university adjusts to those challenges will have a greater effect on how we are able to serve the students in the state of Alaska than our successes through more favorable times. We need to make our decisions very thoughtfully and carefully because they're going to have a huge impact on the sustainability of this university and its important role in serving the state. So I do look forward to the next year in many ways. I, of course, would hope for more support from the legislature in the coming fiscal year and their actions for the next fiscal year than they showed this year. But we can work together to improve the chances that we'll achieve a good degree of support from the legislature, and I look forward to doing that.
Thank you. Okay, the first item of business we need to take care of is to approve the Senate meeting calendar for the next year.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Call the question.
Thank you. any objections? Okay, calendar is accepted. Next item is faculty senate committee assignments. Hope you had a chance to look at that. This is was first approved by the admin committee and is now put before the Senate.
Move to approve.
Second. I do have one comment, though, that the Board of Regents are continuing their assessment of the research program, and they've asked for faculty input through RAC, and Orion Lawler and I have offered to help them complete that process over the summer. So there will be some committee business going on over the summer. That's all.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so I have a second.
Yes, second. Fransman is second.
Any objections? Okay, none. Thank you. Accepted. And the last thing is a routine motion that we have every year that basically allows the admin committee to take care of business if it arises over the summer when the Senate doesn't meet. And that doesn't happen very often. Last summer it did when there was an issue related to the Sunstar. At that point, the admin committee met once or twice, but other than that, it doesn't happen very often. But we do need the approval by the Senate to do that if we need to.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Any objections? All right, thank you. Well, with that, we adjourn the first meeting of the new Faculty Senate, and I will see you in the fall. Thank
you. Not meeting 200?
Yes.
UAF Faculty Senate.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
I imagine.